Dons fans, as we bask in the luxury of a 9-day break, needing every second of it to get our heart rates back to normal following our epic Anzac Day draw against the Pies, which took the Dons to 4 wins, 2 losses and a draw. We pack our suitcase and our passports ahead of our Round 8 clash against a resurgent West Coast Eagles in the Republic of Western Australia. I'm Jonathan Walsh, and Ian Hume joins me in the Don the Stats studio to talk through it all. Hume, how are you, mate?
I believe that's the glorious Republic of Western Australia, although Kim Jong-McGowan has left the building there. Look, I'm a bit under the weather at the moment, but I had to take the day off work to recover a bit, but I'm feeling better now and ready to get stuck in tonight's show. How are you doing?
Yeah, that sucks, mate. I'm glad you're on the mend. Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Fit and healthy, which is good. And yeah, happy to be here sitting talking footy to you.
Yeah. Well, look, before we start, I want to say thanks to Shorey for joining us on Monday night. It's always a great time having him on. He provides so much gold. It makes our job a lot easier. We sort of just ask him a question and let him go, and he does a great job. So we could easily have had him speak for another hour or so, and the response to it has been as positive as ever, even if he's all but shifted Nick Bryan to St Kilda already.
Yeah, I think rumour has it that he's still on Zoom talking away. Hasn't realised we've down tools just yet. No, it's great to sit back and put the mic on mute for a bit and listen to Shorey. We're really lucky to have him and give up some time to join us. He's such a terrific Essendon person and got such a terrific football mind with such a great blend of experience. So yeah, it was great fun having Shorey join us for an hour or so.
Yeah, and look, as always, thanks to those who signed up to the Patreon. So far this week, that's been Kyle Nicholas, Ian Jay, and Joe. Really enjoying the new chat feature that Patreon has. It's been great reading and interacting with what everyone's had to say during games this past couple of weeks. So if you are a patron and you're only just hearing about the chat feature now, you can access it through the Patreon app or through Patreon on the internet browser. So come along and share your own ideas. And also, Jono put out another excellent video looking at our ability to maintain balance of the contest, something you've spoken about along the podcast, and it really helps visualize what you've been bringing up and why it's important.
Yeah, one of the main benefits of a Thursday game was a bit of extra time on the weekend, mate, to get a chance to, pour through the replay and pull some vision out of something that had been standing out for me for a few weeks now. So, yeah, it was good to get that done and share it. And, yeah, thanks again to everyone who's jumped on board and continues to support us. Well, mate, it's been a full week now since we played a game. Shall we cast our minds back?
Yeah, let's do it. And the 29th Anzac Day clash lived up to the spirit of the very first one in 1995, with the result being the same on both days. Look, let's start with the opening quarter. The first four inside 50s all led to bomber goals, and it felt like everything we did then turned to gold. It did even up halfway through the quarter, and we were probably lucky that the Pies didn't make the most of their opportunities. Although, as we've said before, a goal leads to the ball going back into the centre, and last week we were dominant in the centre. So it doesn't necessarily mean that if the Pies converted their chances, they would have caught up to us, but it might not result in a close quarter. But we did start really positively, and I think really caught the Pies on the hop there.
Yeah, no, you're right. It was pretty electric, wasn't it? It's the first time this season where we've seen that real type of burst from Essendon. We got some real offensive game happening, and we're able to capitalise on momentum. We've had momentum in periods of games before, and kept the ball in our forward half, but not really being able to score. It was the first time, I think, arguably that patch against the Bulldogs where the game opened up a little bit, but where we were really able to capitalise on the momentum that we were generating from clearance. We spoke in the preview that it was likely to be a game of momentum, and it very much played out that way. We were able to cash in when we had it, and that was really important. And then we were in the first quarter in particular, and then we were able to limit Collingwood when they got it back. We responded with two goals after they got their first. So, we worked hard to get it and then worked hard to get it back, which was a really good sign early. They certainly burnt some opportunities, as you touched on, but goal kicking is a skill like any other. We were able to execute under pressure when they weren't. Our pressure rating was really high in that first quarter as well. Going into the game, we'd won 9 of 11 games back since the start of 2023, where we had a pressure rating of 180 plus. In the first quarter, we had a pressure rating of 184. So, when our pressure's that high, good things tend to happen. And we saw that in quarter one. On the flip side, Collingwood's pressure was 168. And I think that no doubt contributed to what we saw on the scoreboard.
Yeah, and I think something else that really benefited us across the whole game, and we talked about this in the preview, was that Collingwood tend to lose games where they concede over 100 marks to their opponents, and that's something we're actually able to tick off. And we took 102 marks for the game. It allowed us to take territory safely and keep the tempo of the game on our terms as much as possible. And then we saw that when we weren't able to control that tempo, and we saw what happened in that second quarter. And if you look at how many marks we took, we only took 17 marks. It was the only quarter where we took under 20 marks for the day. And that's the quarter we got comprehensively beaten in, going down by 18 points in that term overall. When we couldn't control that tempo, we got blown away a little bit there. But once we had that on our terms, we, you know, it was very difficult for Collingwood to move the ball and the like there.
Yeah, having kicked the last goal of the first quarter, which came from a kick-in following that Harry Jones behind, the Pies then kicked the first four of the second. So it was an example, or the longest stretch in the game where we weren't able to wrestle momentum back. That said, we did miss chances within that to break their run. Stringer and Langford both missed set shots in that period of the game. The Pies went down the other end and kicked a goal from a kick-in following the Langford miss as well. So, equally disappointing that we missed opportunities to put score on the board and then gave it back. So their first two goals came from, their first two goals in that run, I should say, it was their second and third goals for the game, came from missed opportunities and then going coast to coast, which we will touch on shortly. The Pies also lifted their pressure in that second quarter. Their pressure rating got up to 213 and they intercepted 10 times in their own forward half. So we were conceding territory when we got it from clearance. We were getting clearance, getting it forward, but then conceding it pretty quickly and allowing them to transition. And then once they got the ball inside their forward half, we couldn't get it back out again, which has been a little bit of a habit in our games, or a bit of a pattern in our games. That said, for three quarters of the game, we held our composure under pressure really, really well. It deserted us in the second quarter, but that does happen against really good teams. They don't let you have it, you know, all your own way. And as we did against Adelaide the week before, we responded really well when we were under, when we were challenged and under that sort of pressure. And I think really, given the way that Q2 was played out, to only lose the quarter by 18 points, I think was a pretty good result, that we stood up and showed some resilience that hasn't been there in the past against a team who's obviously, the reigning premiers are really, really good at what they do.
Yeah, Anzac Day the previous year is an example of that, and there have been other examples against Collingwood in the last couple of years where the same things happened. So we stood up a lot better this time, even if we didn't get quite the result that we wanted. It's good signs going forward. I think the other major element of the Pies game we pointed to pre-game was their improved centre clearance work. And going into the game, Collingwood were the number one centre clearance side and had been getting big impact from Degoe, Pendlebury and Nick Dacos in that space. And the way in which we handled that battle went a long way to getting the result we did. We went plus 11 in centre clearance and we outscored them 21 points to 2 from Chain starting at the centre bounce. And obviously the big change we made this week was putting Stringer in there full time. I noticed him go to Degoe right at the first bounce. So it was clearly a plan for him to do that. Last couple of weeks, he's sort of gone in later in games just to change things up. But here was obviously a major plan to put him there and have him be go head-to-head with someone like Degoe. And, he'd only attended 14 bounces across the opening six rounds, but featured in 21 of 28 on the day. And when he was in there, we won 15 of them, and all our centre clearance goals came from these attempts. So it just adds a completely different dimension to what we can do in that space. And it's a massive positive that we have another trigger that we can pull when we need something different in the middle.
Yeah, spot on, mate. I mean, you and I have handed out criticism towards the coaches, particularly after the Port game, for having a really sort of static midfield and what we felt looked like a lack of tactical application in that game. I'm all praise this time around. As we touched on when we were talking about the second quarter, we didn't get the game all of our own way, and you don't ever get that against really good teams. But to recognise the threat that Degoe posed, to have a plan to counter that with a player that could match him physically and then hurt him offensively, we mentioned in our preview that whilst Degoe was the one that, could really hurt us through the midfield, he's not great defensively, and you can really expose him the other way. And to Jake's credit, and to the coaches, Jake was then able to carry out that plan and did an outstanding job. And he was, you know, probably in all reality, his goal kicking conversion was probably the difference between him, you know, perhaps being the Anzac Day medalist and not. But yeah, he had a fabulous game. And you're right, that the flexibility to pull that lever when we need it, and the emergence of Caldwell and Durham and Perkins, you know, has really changed the dimensions of our midfield and our outlook as a whole, I think. So, yeah, it was really good to see.
Yeah, absolutely. You touched on this a bit earlier, and probably the thing that hurt us most across the day was scores from kick-ins. I thought we handled their transition in play fairly well, but the Pies managed to score 3-1 from kick-ins. It's something we've actually been better at recently. It's the first match this year they've actually conceded a goal from kick-out. There have been a few behind scored against us from this source, and it was something we were touching on, you know, last year and even the year before, where we were getting found out quite often from kicking and conceding easy goals from there. But the Pies seemingly have an above average ability to get the ball moving before we can get our zone set up from behind. So that's what cost us this week. And then obviously it's something we need to focus on again to lock that back down and get back to the early season way we were handling those kick-ins.
Yeah, the Pies went from D50 to forward 50 11 times for the game, which is, you know, just above the AFL average of 9. We went at 10 times ourselves. So there was a bit of that in the game. There was a fair bit of transition. They'd only scored one goal from kick-ins for the season going into that game, and 18th in the AFL for scores from defensive 50 chains with 8.6 a game. So to give up 21 points was disappointing, especially given that 19 points were from kick-ins. I don't think it was our setup or our typical setup that failed us. I think it was our execution to setup. I noticed the Jones one the first time around, and I, you know, pulled over the replay but couldn't work out who to point the finger at. But it was clear that his spot in the zone didn't get covered. So he took a set shot, wasn't in his normal position, of course, and we didn't have cover for it. So we just left holes where there normally aren't any. And we've been playing without much of a safety net behind the ball due to that more aggressive forward press that we're trying to play. At times last year, we papered over that with a deeper, you know, set zone and Jordan Ridley, obviously, as well in the side. That's not the case in 2024. And you know, I'd imagine that would have been covered pretty extensively in the review during the week. It is worth noting, though, we were able to do something relatively similar to them. So I gave the transition numbers, but we also scored 18 points for the game. It wasn't from kick-ins, but 18 points from defensive 50 transitions. So a lot of focus on stoppages and scoring from stoppages and the like, but there was a fair bit of, you know, coast-to-coast scoring happening in that game as well. And I think that's partly driven by the way both teams are trying to play. You know, you get that forward press, it creates more forward half turnovers, but you also get exposed over the back once the ball does get out.
Yeah, and just wrapping up on the Collingwood game, the other thing that a lot of people pointed to that was a big problem for us this week was the lack of inside 50 tackles. And we'd averaged 12.5 a game going into Anzac Day, which was the fifth best in the league, but we only managed 2 for the day. And both of those tackles came in the fourth quarter. So a lot of people have pointed out the fact that we did go the extra tall as the reason why we didn't get those inside 50 tackles. But I also think there are a couple of other important factors there. So firstly, we took Stringer away from the forward line, and he's been a big reason why we've had as good forward pressure as we've had in recent weeks. And secondly, I thought the way we entered forward 50 probably played into Collingwood's hands after quarter time and meant we had less chances to put on pressure.
Yeah, you're right, mate. I think it's a combination of factors. We took the most contested marks we've had in the game this season, and we were slightly up on our season average for inside 50 marks. So that played a role in it. There weren't quite as many opportunities to apply pressure because we were able to, you know, to take marks or go in and score. But we also gave it back to them too often after quarter time. Darcy Moore had a game high 5 intercept marks. And I think that's just a bit of an extension of a problem we've had all season. We just haven't got our ball movement right yet. Our contested work has improved out of sight. Our pressure and defensive setup, that's improved. Our ball movement, that's the bit that still hasn't really clicked for us just yet. So, we're getting the fundamentals of the game more right more often, and that's a big tick for us moving forward. I'm still confident that ball movement piece will come. And you know, that's the bit that we need continuity. You know, new players introduced into the side, you know, the four recruits from other clubs, of course. You know, Durham, new role, Martin, new role, Davey introduced into the side, Hobbs, a new role. So, yeah, there's been a few, fair bit of change. And yeah, it's going to take a little while to click, I think.
Yeah, well, there's another big challenge coming up this week with West Coast having a couple of really good intercept mark players. And again, you know, working around those two will be a big focus for the game coming up against the Eagles. Well, look, sort of moving on from the game, but I've actually got a Don the Stat exclusive here, Jono. Now, I've had some audio sent to me, which was the reaction of some football media pundits to having Anzac Day end in the draw. And I'll play it for the listeners now. Look, jokes aside, the sports editors must rub their hands in glee whenever there's a draw because then they can rerun the same arguments about playing extra time in those situations. I'm sure the articles are sort of a copy and paste job and finding the teams and changing them out for the correct ones. Where do you stand on regular season draws, Jono? Should they stay as is or should we play out extra time to find a definitive winner?
Yeah, I don't have a strong opinion either way, mate, which leads me just to keep it because I don't, you know, I don't really see a good reason to change it. And, you know, if we take Thursday as a game in isolation, I think if any game deserved to be a draw, you know, both teams, you know, the pressure in the game was immense. Both teams had opportunities to win. Both teams had opportunities to lose. It felt like a game that just genuinely deserved a draw. And yeah, I kind of like that. So yeah, I'm not necessarily, yeah, I'm sitting on the fence a little bit because I just don't feel strongly either way. But I think, you know, with all that in mind, just keep it. There's no reason to change it. What about you?
Yeah, look, I think the draw in the regular season makes sense to keep. It's a legitimate result. Maybe I'm just used to cricket where there are draws all the time and the Premier League where they, you know, they don't just keep playing until they get a result in regular season games. I imagine probably people who are more into American sports might be more open to playing that extra time, given that's the culture over there. But for me, I think you just keep it. And as you said, neither side really deserved to lose on Thursday. So it was a fitting result and let's keep it that way. And look, just before we move on to the Eagles, there was some great news coming out a couple of hours before recording, just before selection, with Andrew McGrath having agreed to a 6-year deal in his free agency year, taking him or locking him away to the club all the way to 2030. And look, especially given the start of his season and how professional and hardworking he is, I think it's a no-brainer to keep him around for that long. And yeah, you know, I don't think there was any realistic chance of him leaving, but it also helps keep down, you know, the articles mid-season like we got with Darcy Parrish last year. Is he going to stay? Is he not going to stay? And that helps the club keep focus and fans keep focus on the team.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, his first two contract re-signings he put off until post-season. So they were announced after the season had finished. And then his more recent one still happened towards the back end of the season. So I think for us to have this, or for Andy to lock himself away and sign up in, you know, in April or you know, the start of May, you know, early in the season, I think is a good sign of where he sees the club at and the direction that it's heading. He's our vice captain. He's in really, really good form at the moment. So, you know, to have all of that locked away and now he can just go forward and keep playing a high standard of footy, I think is, yeah, it is a really good thing and a big positive for the club. Yeah, 6 years on the surface probably feels a little long, but that's the modern game, isn't it? We're seeing more 5, 6, 7, 8-plus-year deals happening at the moment. So, yeah, and I'm sure, as we have with some other deals recently, we've positioned this in a way where we structure his payments to our advantage so that we're keeping plenty of space in the cap to continue to improve our list.
Yeah, he seems like the sort of player that hasn't taken, you know, a maximum deal there. There's been word about McCluggage looking for 1.2, 1.3 as part of his free agency year. I don't think Andy McGrath's anywhere near that. You're probably looking more around whatever Parrish got as a more likely figure there. But again, I'm just speculating there. But again, he doesn't seem the type that would, you know, try and get as much out of the club as he can, which could potentially limit their ability to get other players in and limit their ability to be successful. Well, look, let's turn our attention to our opponents this week, which is the Eagles. And the Eagles finished 2023 with their second consecutive bottom two finish, although they did manage to win one more game than the previous year, finishing with three victories, but a percentage of only 53. They did have a round two win over eventual grand finalist GWS, although I do recall that in round one, GWS played a game in about 40 degree heat. So I think they were pretty zonked heading over to Perth there. And I think that contributed to the Eagles getting up in that game. But that was followed by a 16 game losing streak before they beat fellow cellar dwellers North at Optus, with another win coming against the Dogs 3 weeks later. Little look to have changed in the opening three rounds of this year, with the Eagles losing by over 50 points against each of Port, the Giants, and the Dogs. A more competitive showing came against the Swans at Gather Round before they won their first game of the year against the Tigers by 39 points, before shocking everyone with a derby win against the more favoured Dockers. They then last week lost to the Suns away, which we'll touch on in more detail a bit later. And so they're currently sitting in 15th place with a percentage of 74. So as you imagine, with a side that had such a poor record last year, they sat in the bottom two for most of the major statistical categories, including things like clearances and contested possessions. I think it's not really worth going through and saying they were 17th, 18th for all these stats. So let's focus more on what's changed this year. And really the first thing that stands out is they've become much more of a kicking side. This year, they're kicking the ball 1.62 times per handball, and that's up from 1.32 last year. And look, that's even higher in their wins. They're going at 1.72 in their wins. So they've really made a change, sort of following what's happening with a lot of the competition, with many more kicks being taken this year rather than handballs. They're sort of following that trend, but they have made a big jump from last year to this year.
Yeah, even in their loss against Gold Coast last week, mate, they went at 2.07 kicks per handball, which is massive. It's gone from 1.42 in the first 4 weeks of the season up to 1.83 over the last three games. So, yeah, they're certainly looking to move the ball by foot a whole lot more than they were. And I think part of that is that they're getting a little bit more clearance and a little bit more contested ball, which means that they're then able to get the ball onto the into the outside a little bit more and spread, and not finding themselves in as much pressure situations as perhaps they were in games gone by and last season.
In their losses this year, they've been minus 1.6 and minus 4.2 for centre and stoppage clearance, whilst in their wins, they're plus 4 and plus 4.5 respectively. So one of their wins has come against Richmond, which is a bottom-rated team for both of those stats. But the win against the Dockers is fairly impressive, given that the Dockers this year are third for centre and first for stoppage clearance differential. If you want a bit of comparison, Essendon rate second and third for the same metrics, and they came up against the Gold Coast Suns, who are currently the number one centre clearance side. So, look, they've been playing some really strong clearance sides this year or in the last couple of weeks, and they've done well against one and not quite so well against another. So it is something we're going to have to watch out for, and it flows through to their contested possession numbers. So they're down 10 in losses, but plus 31 more in wins. So the players to watch out for, as you would expect, are Yo, Reid, Kelly and Jimby. Those ones have pretty much all season, other than when Yo missed last week. They've pretty much taken the majority of their centre bounce attendances. They haven't really rotated many other players through, other than Petrocelli last week when Yo was out. Each of those players that I spoke about got five or more clearances in that Freo win, and all of them, bar Kelly, got over 10 contested possessions. So they're the real generals in their midfield and the ones we have to watch out for.
Yeah, they got hammered at centre clearances last week. They lost centre clearances 7-19, resulting in Gold Coast outscoring the Eagles 26-12 from that source. The Fremantle game was a peculiar one. West Coast was plus 24 in contested possessions, but then they did lose stoppages by 7, but then went to win stoppage scores 39-32 in West Coast favour from stoppages. So it was, yeah, a little bit weird to win contested ball by that much, lose out by stoppages by 7, which is quite a differential, but then go on to win scores by 7.
Yeah, and probably the other thing that stands out between their wins and their losses has been their intercept game. So they're minus 4.2 intercepts in losses compared to plus 7.5 in wins. And that's really been driven this year by the greater availability of premiership players, Jeremy McGovern and Tom Barras. Both those players lead the Eagles for intercepts this year. And those players, whilst only played 9 and 14 games respectively last year, they've been available all games this year, bar Barras being out for the Suns game due to suspension. So you know, we touched on earlier how Moore was able to control the ball from the back against Collingwood. You know, McGovern and Bourassa in that same conversation in terms of intercept defenders. So we're going to have to be on our game in that part of the ground in order to stop them from being as influential as Moore was last week.
Yeah, absolutely. Despite their sort of modest returns this year as a side, McGovern has taken the 16th most intercept marks in the AFL this season, Bourassa 27th, and McGovern is also 11th for total intercepts. So it's that contribution they're getting from their senior players that has seen them be a little bit more competitive this year, and in particular over the last 3 to 4 weeks, and it's dragging their young players along with them as well. So yeah, it's something that we're going to have to be mindful of, and we certainly can't go into this game resting on our laurels, because they do have some top-end talent in terms of experience, and then some really, really good young kids that can expose us if we're off our game. But mate, they had a pretty busy off-season, as you'd probably expect, given how last year went for them. Do you want to talk us through it?
Yeah, so look, as you'd expect from the Wooden Spooners, the off-season saw big changes in the makeup of their list. Three club greats retired, with premiership players Shannon Hearn and Luke Shuey, joined by three-time All-Australian Nick Natanui. Whilst Natanui didn't feature last year, Hearn and Shuey played 13 and 10 games respectively, and they also delisted six others, with Sam Petrescu-Seaton with 13, Greg Clark with 12, Xavier O'Neill with 15, and then Luke Foley and Connor West both with 9, all having significant game time. So they did cut pretty heavily into their list, particularly in terms of players that were on the field for them last year. They have brought in Tyler Brockman. He played 6 of 7 games to last game, although he's been dropped for this round, as we'll get into with selection. Matt Flynn from GWS has picked up as a free agent, but he's yet to feature this year. West Coast also benefited from just another fantastic decision by that superbly run club, North Melbourne, securing the number one pick when the Kangaroos won their last round clash against the Suns. With that pick, they secured former Essendon VFL player Harley Reid. Reid played the first 6 games before being rested for round 7 and has been instrumental in their 2 wins so far. Also coming in via the draft for 3 others, including Zach Reid's brother Archer, and another one of them is coming into this side with Harvey Johnson, who was taken at pick 49.
Yeah, we'll get onto it in a moment, mate, when we talk about selection, but they have selected one of their 2023 draftees for their debut this week. Harvey Johnson was pick 49 in the national draft last year, kid from Sandringham Dragons. He's got a bit of Archie Perkins about him too, who also came from the Dragons, if my memory serves me correctly. He's got a good turn of foot. He's quite evasive. He's 183 centimetres and can play forward and midfield. So, yeah, he's an exciting young player for them. You know, who won't get too many accolades given they had the number one pick in Harley Reid. But, yeah, another player that we can sit back and have a look at and see how he goes on Saturday night.
Yeah, well, look, let's turn our attention to selection and 2 changes for the Bombers this week, with 2 injured players coming back in Archie Perkins and Matt Guelfi. Guelfi featured in the VFL victory against the Pies last week, whilst Archie Perkins is just coming straight back in following his hamstring strain against the Power in round 4. Out goes Sam Draper, who's got an injured knee, and he has been sort of, from what we hear, he's been managing low-level soreness for a while now at training, and it's probably, rather than running into the ground, it's probably good for him to get a break. And then Nick Hind has been omitted, so the sub from last week has been omitted. We haven't made a huge amount of changes, and again, given the result in the VFL, it is pleasing that we're starting to build some depth in the VFL that are pushing for selection, with players like Sardis and Scheel and the like putting in good shifts in the VFL, but not being able to force their way into the side at this stage.
Yeah, I like it, mate. I like the changes. So, look, hopefully Draper's injury is not too bad, and it is a bit of a case of him being managed, and he overcomes it quickly. It is particularly interesting to me that they haven't brought Nick Bryan in to replace him, given that, you know, we suspect most people seem to suspect that Brad Scott is a fan of 2 rucks over the 1. And, you know, Nick Bryan had a good hit out and a good game against Collingwood in the VFL on the weekend. So he's in a level of form, but nonetheless, we've gone with the 1 ruckman, which, you know, if I had a choice, would be the way I go about it. Perkins comes into the midfield rotation and gives us a 5th midfielder to join Merritt, Parrish, Caldwell and Durham. It gives us an opportunity to manage some minutes of the later two, who have carried big loads the past few weeks. I think we need to to remember. You know, Durham in particular has only played a handful of games now as an AFL midfielder. So, and he's a real combative one at that. His body's taking a pounding, and he's probably not going to be able to continue that at that level, at that number of minutes each and every week. So it gives us an opportunity to rotate a little bit more. And it also allows us to keep Stringer forward, which I think is beneficial. West Coast second ruck will likely be Jack Williams. He's predominantly a forward. He's in his third season, so he's still, you know, relatively slight. He's also 198 centimetres, so he's not a typical, you know, 206 centimetre ruckman that is the normal these days. So we'd have to back Wright and Cox to be able to account for him, I would say. And I also assume that Guelphy moves into the sub role that Hind have been playing. What do you think there, mate?
Yeah, you probably would think so, although there might be someone they're looking to lock down on in West Coast defensive half that moves the ball, kind of like the job he did on Sicily, and they might want him in on for the whole game to do a similar job. I think probably from the other players, unless you just wanted to ease Perkins back into it, Hobbs and Davey probably strike me as the other two options for that role. It's a hard decision to make, which is good, as we touched on earlier. We want the selectors to have to make hard choices. It's generally the sort of thing that helps improve the side.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the one risk for me that I think where we've been really hurt in transition is where we've had too many, you know, natural midfielders play in that half forward role. So, you know, Hobbs and Perkins both playing there, and Guelphy. I worry that structurally that we're going to lose out a little bit there. For me, at least on balance, Hobbs and Guelphy are playing for one primary role in as that sort of more defensively minded, small forward or half forward. So I hope that we stick with Davey. I think he's seen shown some pleasing signs over the last few weeks.
Yep. And turning to West Coast, some good ins for them. Tom Barras, as we touched on, returns from suspension. Harley Reid, after being rested as well against the Gold Coast, is back. They've also brought in small forward Noah Long and debutant Harvey Johnson, who we talked about before. Out goes Harry Edwards. Jaden Hunt, who's injured, who's probably a fairly big loss in terms of their ball movement on the wings there. Dom Sheed, who hasn't had much luck so far this year. And then Tyler Brockman has also been omitted there.
Yeah, not great signs for Tyler Brockman, given, you know, he's an experienced player and come across from Hawthorn. They've left him out. But anyway, that's their problem and not ours. I agree. Jaden Hunt's a big miss. He typically plays well against us, particularly when he was playing for Melbourne. Those sort of real hard running wingers can expose the likes of, not so much Dersma, but certainly Cox and Heppel, who have been playing in that wing rotation for us. So it's a little bit handy for us that he's not there. We touched on Harvey Johnston earlier. I don't think Harley Reid needs much of an introduction, being a former Essendon great anyway. And Noah Long, we've seen play against Essendon previously. He's lightly framed, but he's a really exciting small forward. So he's one to keep an eye out on Saturday night.
Yeah, and look, let's look at West Coast last game against the Gold Coast. We've talked about it a little bit, but just for refreshing everyone's memory, Gold Coast 17-10, 112, defeated West Coast 12-3, 75. It was a closely fought first half before the Suns kicked 10 goals to 5 in the second to run out 37-point winners. And the margin probably didn't reflect the Suns' dominance around the ground. They had 32 more inside 50s, 45 more hitouts, 12 more centre clearances, and 37 more contested possessions. The Eagles were kept in it by their accuracy before being overwhelmed by the home side. Looking at the individual performances for the Eagles, Liam Duggan was the only Eagle to have more than 20 disposals. He had 26, along with 586 metres gained as their leading mover of the ball. Elliot Yeo only had 19 disposals, although 9 of those were clearances. Jake Waterman continued his excellent form with 4 goals, whilst Jack Darling and Jamie Cripps both kicked 2.
Yeah, the game followed a bit of a pattern that has emerged with West Coast of late. They were pretty spirited for half a game against Sydney in gather round before the Swans ran away with it. West Coast were up by 5 points at halftime and then lost the game by 26. The two positive results in between, you know, against a pretty poor Richmond side, and then West Coast got Fremantle on a really poor day for Freo. And then against the Suns, they were within 3 points at halftime before losing by 37. And again, you know, we touched on it earlier. That's the inconsistency that you get with younger teams and perhaps a lack of fitness and resilience to be able to run out games. I think the difference in the game for Gold Coast was they were able to transition with, you know, relative ease, outscored the Eagles 33 points to 13 from defensive half turnovers. And then the Suns were also able to kick four goals from stoppages in their forward 50. And that's been a bit of a pattern as well. Freo kicked two goals, one in their game against the Eagles from forward 50 stoppages. Sydney kicked four goals, one from forward stoppages in their game against the Eagles. So, with Peter Wright in that forward line for us, and being able to take the ruck, that should be a part of the game that we look to get a real ascendancy in, given, you know, we've been, you know, really good from stoppages all around the ground ourselves. So the ability to lock the ball inside 50, get a stoppage and then score from it is something that we would really be looking to expose.
Yeah, and I get based on that, the forward 50 tackle numbers are going to be really important this week. We don't want to have another two tackle week this week. We want to be getting back up to our season average of around 12 there to create those opportunities that you talked about there. Well, let's focus on the game itself and some of the challenges that West Coast will throw up against us. And look, most of the attention is going to be on Harley Reid, and undoubtedly he'll be capable of having a big impact. However, for me, Yeo is the biggest threat, and if he manages to get on top of the midfield, we'll have the biggest issue. I think, you know, Reid is obviously really good, but again, young, being able to impact across a whole game, you know, might be beyond him at this stage, although that could be famous last words and he gets 40 and 10 clearances and three goals. And I'm sitting here crying next week for mozzing us. But look, we have had to cope with some impressive midfields the past couple of weeks, especially against the Dogs and Pies. So we have shown we have the cattle to run with good midfields. But that said, given Stringer's impressive game last week, are you playing him predominantly in the middle again, or does he revert to more of a forward?
No, I'm keeping Stringer forward this week, mate, and we'll touch on why I'd be doing that shortly. I think, you know, give him one or two centre bounces a quarter, as we saw in our games against the Crows and the Bulldogs, just to give West Coast something a little bit different to look at, give our mids a bit of a rest, and just to add another dimension to that midfield. But otherwise, I'd be keeping him inside 50. I think with Perkins back into that midfield mix, Durham and Caldwell there as well, we've got the size to go with them without needing Stringer in the midfield. You're right, Yeo holds the key. We shouldn't forget about Tim Kelly. He's having a really good season as well. So it's not just a Yeo and Reid show, that Tim Kelly's in there as well. And they use Petrucelli through the midfield with some good effect against Gold Coast. He's obviously got some real speed and can hurt you that way. But yeah, Yeo is the one that's making those around him better. He's fifth in the AFL for contested possessions per game. He's also fifth in the AFL for both centre clearances and stoppage clearances. And that's in a team that's ranked 9th and 15th in centre clearance and stoppage clearance differential, respectively. So, you know, he's really carrying the bulk of the workload in that regard. He's 8th in the AFL for score launches. So, score launch, for those that aren't familiar, is the person who starts off a possession chain that then results in a score. The seven players ahead of him are all ruckmen, and keep in mind that hitouts can start a possession chain, which is why you often see rucks dominating that statistical measure. So for him to be, you know, the number one ranked non-ruckman in the competition is really impressive. And on top of that, he also leads them for tackles and is second for pressure acts. So he's working both ways, with and without the footy. I think, you know, Durham to go to Yeo is the move for me, mate, similar to what we saw of him against Bontempelli a couple of weeks ago. If he can limit his impact, then it... And the great thing about Sam Durham is he does it with pressure, but he also does it by getting to the ball first. And if he can impact restrict the impact that Yeo has, then that by default restricts the impact that Kelly and Reid can have on the game.
Yeah, indeed. And someone else we mentioned earlier, or a couple of players we mentioned earlier, were Barras and McGovern, and they're an impressive 1-2 punch in their back line, and it has the capability to cut off many attacks if we're not careful with our entries into forward 50. How do we make sure we don't fall into the trap of kicking where those two can impact the game? And with Liam Duggan, who provides most of their drive from half back, is he someone we should be looking to lock down on?
This is the reason I want Stringer forward, mate, particularly if we're going to need right to ruck at times. With Stringer forward, we have, you know, four marking players who are genuine threats. Jones will get up the ground, and then we've got Wright, Stringer, and Langford to separate and create one-on-ones and individual targets going forward. I think the rest of our forwards also thrive off the work that Stringer does defensively. When Jake's up and about and he's chasing and pressuring, you do see a genuine enthusiasm from the rest of our forwards, and that sparks everyone else. So I think it's important there. Duggan gets up the ground for them much in the same way that Nick Martin does for us. He's number three at the Eagles for inside 50s this season. So Hobbs has been playing that defensive forward role of late, and I'd set him that task again.
Yeah, and then speaking about going inside 50, you know, their forward line does have some challenges, and obviously Jake Waterman seems to have turned into a latter-day Wayne Carey, hopefully just on the field, and has found a new potency there. He's a similar size to Jake Stringer, who we know is a tough matchup for opponents. Which of the Essendon defenders you see as being best suited to playing on him?
Yeah, he's an interesting matchup, isn't he? He's only, well, I say only, but he's 192 centimetres, so he's not what you typically think of when it comes to a 200 centimetre key forward. But he has real speed. He plays taller. He turns his opponents around, so he'll get up the ground and U-turn back towards goal. It sounds cliche, but I think so much of how we stop him is going to be what happens up the ground and making sure that they're not getting easy ball use inside 50. They've got two other tools there with Williams and Marek as well. So we're going to need Redmond to probably play a little bit taller, like he did against the Bulldogs a couple of weeks ago, where he took the Darcy matchup. I don't think we necessarily go man on man here with a direct opponent. I'd be trusting our zonal setup here rather than direct matchups. It probably means that Laverde plays deepest, and for a lot of the time that'll probably be Waterman, but at other times it'll be either Williams or Marek, and that's okay. I'm trusting Mackay and Redmond on when to drop off and when to go up the ground with their opponent. And that gives Mackay the opportunity to intercept in the air as well against, you know, a couple of younger forwards who are, lighter framed and don't have the strength that Mackay has. And that also gives him the opportunity to get in front of Waterman and help out Laverde and or Redmond, depending on who has the matchup at the time. So yeah, for me, it's less about individual one-on-one direct matchups, more about just getting that zonal set up right, pressure up the ground and seeing if we can free Mackay and Redmond up a little bit to be able to intercept.
Yeah, there's also Darling there as well in their forward line. He didn't touch on, hasn't been in the best form, although still did kick a couple of goals last week. He's not sort of the Jack Darling of a few years ago, but again, one of those dangerous players who can get off the chain there. And they've brought Long back as well, and that provides them with some small forward class as well as with Petrocelli. So definitely a challenging Eagles forward line there to worry about. And look, turning more to us, what are the advantages that we should be looking to emphasise to really trouble the Eagles there? What do we want to make sure we're doing well?
Yeah, I think it's the things that have held us in good stead over the last 3 weeks. Mate, our focus on the contest and spread from stoppages is going to be important. We can't drop off that part of the game because we think we might have an easier kill. We're not at that level yet where we can coast through games and expect to just rock up and get a win. Our pressure is going to be really important with a real intensity in the front half. Bring that back and keep building on those habits. And then I think the other thing that does hold us in good stead is our ability to run out games. Only Sydney and Melbourne have won more fourth quarters than us this season. West Coast haven't won a last quarter yet. So, a younger side with a fair bit of inexperience versus a team, and we spoke about this with Shorey, we're not a young team anymore. We don't necessarily have the experienced stars that some of the best teams in the comp have, but we've got a good spread of experience and depth of experience now with, Martin and Durham and the likes, hitting, 50 games plus and the group behind them sort of getting to 30 and 40 games. So, yeah, we should expect to play. Our focus really should be to play four quarters and have a really professional effort across those and win every quarter by a goal or two plus, and walk away with a win.
Yeah, and just sort of building on that, running out games, it is a 9-day break to a 6-day break, even though we are travelling, across the Nullarbor, and West Coast had to make probably the longest journey in football last week to Gold Coast, or Brisbane's arguably a little bit further, but basically the same. And Again, they're coming off as owning a 6-day break there. So no excuses there to not be able to run out this game really strongly. Well, let's turn now to our final thought. And as we've been doing, it comes from our patrons. And this week it's come from Josh Wilson. So thanks, Josh, for suggesting this. And he asks, will the Essendon Edge make its way to Perth this weekend?
Yeah, look, I think it will, mate. I don't think our coaches will allow it not to be checked onto the plane as excess baggage. I think we'll be paying those additional fees to make sure that it gets over there. I'm confident that we learnt a lot out of that Port loss and the game against the Crows as well. So, I think that Crows game has the potential to be a real turning point and a real reference point for what it takes to really dig and grind and what you need to do when you play interstate. So, yeah, I think it'll make it across there, mate, and we'll learn our lesson from what happened against Port.
Yeah, fingers crossed there. Well, look, that'll do us tonight. A bit shorter than usual, but that suits me given my state of health. Don't forget to get your tickets for the live show. That's happening before the Giants game at a Hightail Bar with ourselves, the Flight Plan, and the Lunchtime Catch-Up podcast. We're finalising everything now. We've probably only got about, 25% of the tickets left to go, which is really exciting. As always, there's a link in the description of the episode in order to get those. Any final words from you, Jono?
Yeah, it's coming up fast, mate. It's only, 9 days to that event, so it's going to be a lot of fun. Mate, get on the Lem Sip and the honey in your tea and rest up and look after yourself, mate, and get back to full health and fitness soon. Looking forward to obviously watching the game on the telly on Saturday night and cheering on the lads to, get our fifth win for the season.
Yeah, me too. Look, stay safe, everyone, and go Dons.